Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is a Friday afternoon, the weekend dead ahead. Andrea Haines is the editor for Blue Sky Innovation. You read that at ChicagoTribune.com and in the Chicago Tribune. And she comes by most Friday afternoons. She's with us this afternoon. Andrea, good to talk to you.
You too, Steve.
There's so many statistics and things coming back and forth when it comes to tech in Chicago, but there's one thing that we can count on. It's reassuring to know that Chicago is number one for female founders when it comes to cities around the country, right?
I know, we would love to think that, wouldn't we? So there was a study that found that, and we kind of took an extra hard look at it because we have not necessarily found that to be our experience. Doesn't mean it isn't true, but it brought us enough surprise that we dug a little closer into the survey.
Yeah, so you look at the numbers. It was a survey done by Compass, which is itself a startup out of San Francisco, and it doesn't really hold. I mean, we're doing okay, right? But to say that we're number one in the country just isn't true.
Yeah, it wasn't quite exacting enough to really make that kind of judgment. And because the number was so, you know, it was exciting to people. People seized on it. People have been repeating it month after month. And finally, we thought, like, we really need to see if this is true. It's difficult to prove it's not true. Startups are a difficult thing to count. You know, they come and go quickly.
Sure.
And whether the founders are women or not, that's not something that's very findable information. But that's maybe all the more reason to be a little suspect of it.
And you have to start with the definition. I mean, how do you figure out what is or what is not a startup, too?
Yeah, it's very difficult. So I think the company that did the study plans to do it again, and they are growing in how they're doing it. So, you know, maybe in future years, they'll be able to get their arms around more of the community and hopefully come up with a number that we're all more comfortable with.
We talk a lot about Groupon on this show and in this segment as well. They had a nice second quarter, right? The revenue was up. And I did not know, but part of this has to do with them starting their own line of products. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so Groupon Goods is what it's called, and it's an area where they're actually doing, rather than coupons, they're, you know, selling hard products under their own private label. So this week, they have created Form and Focus, which includes workout shirts, leggings, basically athletic leisure kind of wear for women.
Women, okay.
Yeah. So, the company that's doing really well, so they're rolling out more items under that line.
I love that this line of clothing is called athleisure, as I read in Blue Sky Innovation, which I hadn't thought of, but it's workout clothes that people just wear around all the time, and that's kind of what people wear anymore.
Absolutely. It's become streetwear. You know, it was yoga pants. Now it's kind of leggings, you know, the hoodie type thing, all those things that you might look like you're going to an exercise class, but you might just be doing your errands.
You might just look like you need to go see an exercise class.
Oh.
So tell me a little bit more about this idea. So I know they've got a men's line of clothing as well. And is this, it seems like it's sort of contrary to their initial mission, but it's working well for Groupon.
Yeah, it is. And it has been for a few years. It's also interesting that they, you know, they've been doing a little more advertising lately. And on that end of things, they're really stressing the experiences and hoping that you'll use the actual Groupon coupons to buy experiences that you can do. But then at the same time, they have this goods line that's doing really well for them.
Which is not about experience at all.
Exactly.
Raise is a company that we followed as well. And Raise seemed like a great idea. You take your gift cards that you get from grandma at Christmas time or whenever, gift cards to, you know, the Hallmark store or something you don't really want to use, and you can go to Raise. They will buy them at a bit of a discount, but at least you're getting something out of it. A great idea, was doing very well, but now I see that they've got job cuts announced this week.
Yeah, they did. They're cutting 15% of their staff, which had grown to around 300 employees. They've been one of those startups that's been on fire for the last couple of years, growing really fast, really high valuations. They've gotten a lot of funding. It seems like a great consumer idea that you can sell your gift card at a loss but get the cash you want. That's chugging on, but just in terms of having all these employees that they have, they've had to tighten back on that.
I think the quote from them is that they want to align skill sets with a strategic vision, which when I read that, I thought, wait a minute, this seems to happen with these startup companies. They've got great success. They bring a lot of people in, and then they have to, it seems they almost have to, let many people go. Is that sort of a model that you're seeing?
I mean, I think you could see that they would have to refine what they're doing. You know, the business might grow in unexpected directions, not just Raise, but any business, and they might need to, you know, realign who they hire. I will say a quote like, align skill sets with strategic vision makes me think less of a startup and more of a corporation.
Quite right.
So maybe that's a sign that your company has grown up when you're issuing statements like that.
It just seems like maybe these companies bring on a lot of people for a big, fast start, and they know that the number of people they have just isn't sustainable, but they bring them on in the beginning with the idea that they're going to let them go eventually.
Yeah, I think that can be true. And it's also depending on, you know, are they getting funding? You know, if they're bringing in millions and millions of dollars in funding, they have a little more room to breathe with having those employees. If that has slowed down, you know, they may need to rethink that.
Hey, you've got a great story as well about Chicago entrepreneurs and vacation. Here we are in August. People go on vacation and they need to unplug. But, you know, I mean, you're holding your computer now and your smartphone, and the idea of stepping away or decompressing is harder and harder than ever. I know you guys talked to a number of innovators and entrepreneurs in Chicago. Was there a central theme, or what did you find?
Yeah, so we talked to 10 of these kind of go-getters, and perhaps not surprisingly, they did not have an easy time unplugging, even when they were on vacation. The one way that they seemed to be able to do it is if they literally forced themselves in terms of going someplace where there was literally no reception, or maybe having a deal in their family where they weren't literally allowed to touch their phone. I mean, they had to go to sort of extreme rules and measures, or simply make internet unavailable to be able to stick to it.
Right, Ravine Gandhi. Ravine Gandhi, the CEO of GMM Nonstick Coatings, actually had to get married to decompress, it says.
That's a really extreme way to decompress, I guess.
He got married and on his honeymoon went somewhere, like you said, where there was no internet reception. I bring him up because I think he's in the green room. He's our next guest on the Business Lunch.
Yeah, I know you have him on the show once in a while. And as you know, he's very high energy. So he's definitely one of the go-getter types. It's hard to imagine him sort of unplugging for very long.
Well, another thing that came up in the article was from one or two of the entrepreneurs was, look, this is how we decompress. Working this way in many ways is a great release for us, and to not work only increases the stress in our world.
I think that's true, and I think keeping up on things and not coming back to surprises maybe makes some people feel better. And a couple people sort of articulated that for them it's a time that they can think bigger thoughts. Maybe they're not involved in the minutia while they're on vacation, but it allows them to think about the strategy of the company and, you know, maybe have some bigger ideas.
I'll tell you, though, the idea of not wanting to come back to a pile of stuff I can relate to. I've been off for a while, as you know, and really all I did during the time I was recuperating was delete email.
Yeah.
I get hundreds of emails a day, and if I didn't stay on it all the time, it would have been impossible when I came back. So I kind of get that, too.
Yeah, that's frustrating. I noticed that Lin-Manuel Miranda, the creator of Hamilton, said that he read the Hamilton book, which is 700 or 800 pages, while on vacation. So I guess that shows you can get some pretty big ideas if you are able to get your thoughts off the daily grind for a minute.
I think it worked out for him. Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand, your host. Michael Heidemann is the producer of the program. He's the guy that you can email or talk to when you call him on the phone. Ravine Gandhi is the reason my eggs don't stick to the pan when I have breakfast every morning. The CEO of GMM Nonstick Coatings, and he joins us once again on the Business Lunch. Ravine, thanks for talking.
Hey, great to be here.
I don't know if you heard me talking to Andrea, but we mentioned that piece in Blue Sky about entrepreneurs and sort of how they decompress and go away on vacation. I joked that you had to get married and go on a honeymoon to decompress.
I think my wife would probably disagree that I have decompressed, but we had a great safari in Botswana, and I was forced to be unplugged, so that was definite decompression.
Did you find that it changed you at all or helped you, or have you tried to continue that?
Not really. I told them at the trip, I think it's possible, though, to work really hard and to decompress without being totally shut off.
Yeah, there is something to really enjoying what you're doing, and that becomes a release for you, too. You just have to make sure it doesn't overwhelm you, I guess.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, for me, it's all about managing expectations. If I'm snowboarding with, you know, the family, and I say, look, I need 30 minutes in the morning to do some work, after that, as long as I meet that expectation, I think people are pretty fine with it.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you today is about, I don't know, maybe it's about risk-taking. That might be the wrong way to put it, but I guess it's more about overcoming a fear of failure, because when you're running your own business or wherever, you have to fail from time to time in order to grow.
Oh, I think this is such an important point. There is this epic fear of failure in this country, and I think in the world, and there's a fiction out there that successful people succeed right from the get-go. But the fact is, if you really look at anyone who's ever done anything pretty significant, their life is pretty much filled with recurring failure, but they just kept at it.
Well, you've done a lot that's significant. Give me one of your failures.
Well, I started my company, GMM Nonstick Coatings, at the end of 2007 with a partner, and it was just two of us. We had no sales, no employees, no clients. And as you know, by within a year, the economy had fallen through the floor. And by the spring of 2009, we were literally almost out of business, and we almost shut it down. But by keeping our nose to the grindstone, you know, we built it into one of the biggest companies in the world in our industry, and we've got hundreds of employees, and it's all great. But when I say it now, it sounds so easy, but when I think back on what it was like back then, I absolutely had this terrifying fear of failure, but it was definitely, it's human nature.
And what did that failure do? Because what I also read is that successful entrepreneurs are people who aren't afraid of change. In fact, they embrace change. It seems like more than anything, failure forces change.
Yeah, I think that the world changes. Human nature, it's very resistant to change. So I think that you learn that. I also think that once you failed a few times, and then you try to do something else, you have this repository of experiences that you can reference, and you can avoid those landmines. Most really, really smart, successful people I know, they just, instead of making all the right decisions, half the time they're just avoiding wrong decisions.
Right, right. But the other thing then is that there's something about gratitude. You tend to appreciate a little bit more what you have if the risk of losing it has come up from time to time.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's. I kind of like to say it's nice to have a few scars, because it means you've lived, and when something goes really really great, you don't just stress yourself out and go on to the next thing. You actually, you know, soak it up and do have a little gratitude, because things aren't easy all the time.
Ravin Gandhi is the CEO of GMM Nonstick Coatings. It was great to talk to you again. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon, and happy Friday, everyone. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here on 720 WGN. Andy Smith is with us as well, the Executive Vice President at the Mutual Fund Store. You hear me talk about them quite a bit on this program, and the fact that they can help you with your retirement planning. And Andy joins us now. Welcome back to the Business Lunch, Andy.
Steve, how are you? Thanks for having me again.
I would imagine that people call you when the news is bad. I don't know, do you get a spike in calls when the news is good, like today's jobs report?
You know, you'd be surprised. It's, you know, it's like when you get good customer service, or you're at a restaurant and the waiter or the waitress is like exceptionally good. You only hear about things when things are really, really bad. But I do have a couple of people who kind of, you know, try to, you know, keep me smiling and say, hey, things are going well. We got a great jobs number here today, you know, with the 255,000 net payrolls, futures, the entire board seemed to respond well. So it's been a good day. But, you know, sadly, most of the time it's people beating you up and trying to figure out just what the heck's going on, be it the markets or election or the world in general.
Let's talk about the election, because everyone else is, you know, and people say, well, the Democrats win, it's this. If the Republicans win, blah, 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 blah. We've had the conventions now. Do you need to worry about what you're holding when it comes to this election? I mean, should you sort of adjust your portfolio because of the upcoming voting?
You know, a lot of people think that you do, but really not. What we did was we tried to go back to the mid-40s to figure out if you selectively invested based on your, you know, particular party affiliation. So since 1945, if you invested 10 grand in the Dow only when a Republican was in office, it'd be worth like 100 grand in 2015. If you did the same thing for a Democrat in the office, it'd be a little bit more at 300,000. But if you tried to remain as agnostic as possible, keep politics out of your investments, you take that 10,000 invested in 1945, it'd be worth 1.3 million in 2015.
Wow.
So there really is a case quantitatively. I mean, just looking at the numbers, to say, I got to keep my politics out of my investments, you know, work with an advisor, get help doing that, because otherwise, yeah, you might feel good doing it, but it's not going to be good for your bottom line long term.
So it's a long term, long and steady process, no matter who might be in power.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, it makes sense that people are worried and absolutely kind of tuned in to what's happening with the election or geopolitics or markets or anything else. And it makes sense that a lot of people are confused about what to do. But really, no matter who you support, you got to keep your political 401k, because like I said, I mean, just with those numbers, I mean, you are destined for lower amounts of money if that happens.
You know, just talking, it reminds me back in 1992, I was doing news with Roy Leonard, who was a great host on WGN for decades, just a wonderful man. And on the day after Bill Clinton beat George Herbert Walker Bush, there was a businessman who called out of the blue and said, yeah, I'm heading into the office today and I'm going to lay off about a third of my workforce because Bill Clinton won, and I just want to get ahead of the bad news. Well, we all know the economy ended up doing pretty well under Bill Clinton.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, people, you can understand how people are so emotionally tied into what's happening. And this has nothing to do with one party over another. You get charismatic leaders saying certain things. They know what buttons to push. They know when to kind of activate the fear gland, when to activate the greed gland. But, you know, as advisors, I mean, these are the things that we're working through. We talk about this a lot, you know, with our team there in Chicago and Oak Brook and Orland and Northbrook. I mean, I know that these guys are helping people trying to kind of election-proof their investments, because intellectually they know they have to keep politics out. Emotionally, that's what's so hard. So they're spending a lot of time trying to show people how to go back to the long-term plan, how to focus on retirement goals, so that they can still be interested in what's going on with the election. They can still watch the news but not get so hung up on it and know that it's absolutely going to wreck their 401k if they do the wrong thing.
Right. So, you know, they always say that when it comes to the economy, a president gets too much credit in a good economy and too much blame in a bad economy. And that's sort of what these numbers you're talking about show.
You are absolutely right. I mean, you go back to, you know, hundreds of years. I mean, we have three branches of government. And I know that when, like you said, when things go well, certain people want to take credit for that. When things don't go well, people want to pass that blame around. But there's a reason why we have things set up the way that they are. So when we go through these, you know, kind of issues, when we remind people what's happening, when we sit down with them during our client reviews, you spend a little bit of time doing some constitutional government, you know, refreshers,
sure.
Right? Going back to your senior year in high school and reminding people what happens. But all of this stuff, it may not seem like it, but we can get through the next 4 years of whatever happens. But if you're making the wrong changes, if you're thinking that you have to do something in your 401k or your IRA because you're just so wound up with the election cycle, this is going to be the stuff that absolutely wrecks your retirement.
We're talking to Andy Smith, Executive Vice President at themutualfundstore.com. Okay, let's sort of take American politics out of it and look at it in England with Brexit, because
sure.
I'm just trying to figure out a way to not get partisan one way or another. I mean, you could bring up Trump's plans or Clinton's plans, whatever. But when they were arguing over Brexit, they were saying if England votes to leave, it's going to be real trouble for their economy. Should you just ignore that and stay true, or should you pay attention to that? Just as they might say, should Trump win, it's going to be awful, or should Clinton win, it's going to be awful. Just ignore all that chatter?
I think you need to stay interested and involved There's a couple of things. I mean, if you look at the overall exposure, the overall penetration of UK markets in the global economy, it's what, like 6.5% of all global trade. If you look at your standard international stock fund in your 401k or the international index, it might make up like 5%. So yeah, it's something that would get you to sit up and take notice. The thing is that we're probably still a good, you know, year and a half to 2 years out, even once Article 50 is invoked. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that has to happen. So from a trade perspective, from a banking perspective, UK banks still have to figure out how they're going to access Eurozone markets for that. But how it affects your IRA and 401k, the email newsletter requests, all of these, you know, kind of doom and gloom prognostications that you hear about, they want you to think that it's a little bit more than what it is. But when it comes down to how it affects you, your IRA, your 401k, you'd notice it, but this isn't something that you absolutely want to bet on one way or the other.
We just got a few seconds left, but let's look at Social Security and that issue, one candidate or the other. Is that something you should weigh, or again, same sort of thing, it's sort of out of our hands to do anything about?
The two big things that we're seeing, Clinton, you know, her platform revolves around not raising the retirement age. Trump, there's some possibility of raising the retirement age to 70. With Trump, you're probably not going to see a lot of entitlement reform. The one thing with Clinton is that she may, you know, float the program of anybody over the age of 55 could buy into Medicare. But these are the sorts of things that we're talking about now as we optimize people's Social Security benefits. When we go through their retirement plans, there's a lot of options that people have. So you got people with questions about the election and about how it's going to affect their Social Security. What I would say is if you're working with an advisor, call him, call her, get the numbers rerun inside your retirement plan and figure out what's going to change, if anything, based on what we see, not necessarily in November, but maybe a year, year and a half, 2 years from November.
How do people find out more information from the Mutual Fund Store?
Mutualfundstore.com. You can see the bright, shining faces of our team there. You can also just give them a call, 847 area code 498-3636. All of the guys there, they're absolute pros. They're going to build plans that make sense for you, but Mutualfundstore.com is where it all starts.
Andy Smith, great to talk to you again. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Have a great weekend.
We'll talk again soon. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Ori and Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, I've read their information. I've gone to the website, fanloc.com, L-O-Q.com, and I've tried to figure it all out, but I just can't quite get my arms around it. The co-founder of fanloc.com is Jake Fleming, and he joins us on the phone line now. Jake, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Steve, thanks so much for having us. Really grateful for you taking the time, and it's a pleasure to be here.
I need two for game one. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah, go ahead and sign up. And we pronounce it, we like to pronounce it Fan Lock. But yeah, it's got the Q in there to be a little startup feel to it. And yeah, go ahead and sign up, and we'll make sure if your team goes to the game, you'll be there.
All right, fanlock.com. And the idea is the people, fans of teams, buy subscriptions, right? And they pay in, I don't know if it's weekly or monthly. And the reward is that they go to the World Series or Super Bowl or NBA Finals. Explain it all for me.
Sure. So our initial concept here is that we're trying to be a leverage technology to get the most passionate fans together into a fan cooperative or fan co-op. And there's a lot of engaging offerings that we're trying to roll out by year end. But the initial thought here is that you pay in on a very low price weekly subscription based on a couple factors, one of which is being your chances of your favorite team making it to the championship or final series.
Right. So if you're choosing, so this year, if you're choosing the Cubs, you're probably paying more than if you're choosing the White Sox.
Yes, absolutely. You're paying quite a bit, especially if you signed up preseason. The, what you want to do is lock in when the price is most favorable. And I think the Cubs have come down from where they were at preseason, but they're still pretty high premium to get in with that team.
For me to pay once a week, what would it cost me to get guaranteed Cubs tickets for the World Series?
Oh, so the Cubs price right now, I don't know off the top of my head. We just changed it on the website, but it's considerably more than almost everyone else out there, sure, except maybe the Washington Nationals.
Which makes sense because they've got the best record in baseball, and it also would be the greatest ticket to have to see the Cubs actually in the World Series. But so people are paying you the subscription rate, which means you're bringing a pool of money from a lot of fans whose teams aren't going to be in the World Series. That's where you're getting some of your cash. How are you securing the tickets?
Yeah, so we have relationships primarily with brokers in the broker network, and then also some small initial relationships. We're trying to grow this with individual teams.
But there must be a cap on the number of fans for each particular team you can take, right? I mean, you can't have unlimited Sox fans getting World Series tickets.
Yeah, so we have sort of an algorithm that we built out, and there is a cap for each team. We have not reached that yet. We're still in our growth phase, but ideally we want to market this to as many fans as possible, the whole point being to get the true fan into the stadium to see the best game of their life. But, yes, there is a cap. We have not hit that ceiling yet.
And people can still get involved this year for the Cubs or for the World Series?
Absolutely. Correct. Our initial thought is it changes week over week, but we're trying to create an environment and a market where when you feel like you're ready to get engaged, you can sign up at any time, even when it's not the season.
And when it comes to the bottom line, say you're the Cubs, as we said, is the most expensive, but when you end up with the World Series ticket in hand, are you going to have spent much more than face value, about face value, less than face value? How does that look?
So ticket prices can fluctuate based on a number of factors, and we're hoping that we've obviously gotten the tickets using the leverage of the volume on our network to get it below what the ticket would be going for at a market rate. But again, it depends on the way the algorithm sort of optimizes the amount of people and which teams we're on.
Pretty wild. Fanlock.com. It's LOQ.com. Jason Fleming is a co-founder. Jason, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much for the time. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, good luck with this. Bill and Wendy just around the corner here on 720 WGN.